competitor and did the luge and all kinds of...
Well, I've represented three countries in international track and field on their national teams, New Zealand, then Guatemala, where Bill was transferred to as a pilot, and we had permanent residency there for 4 years, and then we moved back to the States. Of course, I became a citizen, represent the United States. Then I became United States National Luge Champion. But I was climbing mountains. That was my first love.
And that was your first love,
and and the mountains, we live in the foothills of the Cascades, and we're very, very lucky people to live in such a place. It's a wonderful area.
And how tall are you?
A 5'3", if I stretch up a little bit.
And Bill's not that much taller.
He's about the same. He's about 5'4", 5'5".
So you should see the energy coming out of these folks. They're small little bodies, but huge energy. And they've been all over the planet and with the most incredible trek. So we're going to close out this hour, start up the next one right away. And let's see, Sandy, did we get a winner to the Soul Spa? Oh, let's see. Soul Spa, Sarah. Congratulations, we have a winner. So that's done. We're just going to turn this hour around, and then as we continue, we're going to hear all about Africa, and we'll find out. You know, I'm reminded that Africa is a continent, that there are, so I'm not real sure where you were. We're going to find that out, and what they did, and why they're so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, because they apparently had a grand time. So find out all about it. Helen and Bill Thayer, Adventure Travelers, are our guests right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
The preceding hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World was brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets. Expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. This is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KWJZ 98.9 FM, Digital HD3 Seattle.
Been there, done that? It's time for a change.
Hi, I'm Rob Spears.
And I'm Brenda Michaels, and we're the hosts of Conscious Talk, radio that makes a difference.
If you're ready to engage life, expand consciousness, and ride the wave rather than be bowled over by the incredible changes that are upon us, then join us Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. on KKNW 1150 AM or 98.9 HD3 or ConsciousTalk.net, where together we'll forge the new human being.
Pam and Rochelle are Chat with Women.
This life, you're becoming my mother. I know I am. I think I am your mother.
Listen to Chat with Women to be informed, motivated, inspired.
So you're saying that he's been married twice before this woman?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Take 1 hour out of your day to learn and grow and change your life.
I see you getting married in 3 years.
Oh, my God.
Every weekday morning at 8, Chat with Women on 1150 KTNW.
I'm Joy Turner, host of Talk With Your Animals, now on Thursdays at 1 p.m. I take your calls and talk with your animal companions about anything you'd like to know from them. You can also talk with your loved ones, both human and animals, on the other side. Tune in to Talk With Your Animals Thursdays at 1 with me, Joy Turner. Thanks for listening.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue, now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
The following hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk, and welcome you to the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World. That's right, I said second hour, so if you're turning in thinking it's the first hour, You needed to spring forward last night, so turn your clocks ahead. It's 10:05, not 9:05. We've been at this for over an hour now. And we do it every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world. If they've got internet access, now the best way to pick up the stream is go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again, and that will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. Now, you can be in touch with us while we're on the air in a few different ways. Phone lines are open, but Sandy requests that you not call unless you have something important to contribute. If you have a question you would like to ask of our guests, Helen and Bill Thayer. Otherwise, Sandy prefers not to be interrupted when they're here. She likes to listen to the stories. So if you have something, a question or comment or something important or pertinent to what we're talking about, you can call Sandy at 425-373-5527. If you're outside of our local calling range, toll-free number is 888-298-5569. And anytime during the show, you can use our live email address, which will come to us in the studio, and that would be animalworldlive@hotmail.com. animalworldlive@hotmail.com. And you can be in touch with us other times by going to the Animal World website, www.marthanorwalk.com. Great information for you there. There are links to all of our sponsors on the homepage. My contact information is there. Go to current events for all the current events items and look around for great stuff. Now, if you want to contact me, you can hit the Contact Martha button, send me an email, or address your own email program to Martha Light, L-I-G-H-T, at AOL.com. I'm delighted to hear from you, questions or comments about the show. If you need my help as an animal behavior therapist and trainer, I don't work via email. You can contact me that way, but I'm just going to send you back, say, call me. As an animal behavior therapist and trainer, I always do a free, no-obligation telephone evaluation, so call me if you got something going on with your animals. If I'm not the best one to help you, chances are I know who is, so I'll make sure you get taken care of. And if you need my services, please bug my voicemail. That is the best way to get a hold of me. I'm still unpacking, still getting organized, got a lot of projects going on. And so if you need me, call me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling. My phone number is 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258. And like I said, bug my voicemail. Now, if you're submitting a current events item, please do so via email because it's easier for me to get to Rhonda, my webmaster, that way. But if you need to post something to Animal World, a new mailing address, and that would be Animal World 19916 Old Owen Road. 19916 Old Owen Road, number 251. And that is Monroe, Washington, 98272. Now, if you need to get a hold of Sandy, you can reach her through her website, which is www.animalnature.com, or you can call her after the show at 206-200-6536. That's 206-200-6536. If you want more of Gary Hill, you can listen to his show Monday evenings, 8 to 9 p.m., Sports Tangle. Right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And got to have more of Helen and Bill Thayer. And you can do that by going to Helen's website, www.helenthayer. That's T-H-A-Y-E-R.com. And Helen, if does your website cover all the details about Adventure Classroom and what you were talking about?
Yes, I can. From my website, people can click on to Adventure Classroom and go there and see some of the educational programs. We're actually upgrading and updating the site. In the next few months, we'll have the African program on there and some other programs as well. So in the next few months, we expect to greatly expand that program.
All right. Well, speaking of Africa, now how many times have you guys been to Africa? Do you know?
Well, the first time we walked 4,000 miles across the Sahara Desert in northern Africa, then we...
How long ago was that?
That was in 1996.
Ah, okay.
Then after that, we walked 1,000 miles through the Atlas Mountains, and then...
And where are the Atlas Mountains?
The Atlas Mountains come up out of Morocco, and they're actually on the western edge of the Sahara Desert. And then now we've returned more to the interior of Africa.
Because you were there a few months ago, because you go in often when you're going to an area to do what you do, you go in first to lay the groundwork.
That's right.
And you did that, last fall?
We did that last November.
Last November. Mm-hmm. And then you were here in December, and you told us, we got to hear all the story about all the pre-plans and the setup.
Mm-hmm.
So now this time you went back... January?
Yes, went back to in February to live with the into Tanzania to live with the Bushmen.
So you were in Tanzania.
Yeah, and the Datoga tribe and the Maasai.
Okay, and Tanzania is where, kind of in the continent.
Tanzania is in East Africa, just a bit west of Kenya, and south of Uganda.
Okay, all right.
It's more or less central east, and. It's an amazing place for tribal activity, cultural activity, and the wildlife, and also the environmental problems of drought. So it's a huge area for study. And because our African program is basically an add-on program. We expect to go back many more times to visit and live with various other tribes over the years. And
so this is really just the beginning.
Yeah, it's definitely an add-on program. It will eventually be a book. Won't concern just one journey in Africa. It will be many, many expeditions and many.
A compilation of all your trips to Africa.
In the meantime, I'm developing a program of walking Africa. You might call the old-fashioned word a slideshow, a digital image show. And I'm presenting that. I'm due to have it actually ready by the first week in May and go back to Tennessee and North Carolina for a week. There to start it off, and then and that again add on. Every time we go back, we can bring back more information and add on, and also add on to the Adventure Classroom program.
Fabulous. So you and Bill took off from Snohomish here, and when you leave, you must have great caretakers for your animals to be able to go for the lengths of time that you do and feel comfortable with your own animal friends, because you have a lot of animals you live with here.
Yes, we have 5 dogs, 3 cats, 10 goats, 1 donkey, all rescued. We do the rescue thing with the animals, but my mother, she lives with us, and she takes care of the animals, the inside animals and the...
I didn't realize your mom lived with you.
Yes, she does. She immigrated from New Zealand almost 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
To live with us.
I got to meet your mom at the gas station.
That's right.
Woo-hoo. Yep. And she is a pistol.
Yeah, she's 91 going on about 50.
Uh-huh, yeah. You'd never know she was 91.
No. Oh. And then our neighbor, we have a wonderful farmer neighbor who is just great with animals. She's a real farmer, and she takes great care of the donkey and the goats, even brushes the donkey for us and so forth.
Oh,
and
that's
so
great. So you can take off and know everybody's good at home.
Everything is taken care of at home. So we can go away and really concentrate on what we need to learn and the information, the photography. We write, we have notebooks of notes that we come back with. And so
So let's start at the beginning. You leave here to fly to Africa. Now, do you take a whole bunch of stuff with you when you leave?
We've learned over the years to travel very light. The camera gear is the biggest
stuff. Okay.
We have 3 cameras with us and all the associated gear with cameras. And our clothing and these sorts of things are very minimal. We've learned that you really don't need all of that stuff. And it's interesting, when we arrive at the airport in Tanzania, the tourists have arrived, of course. You see them all over the place, and they have enormous amounts. They might be there for 2 whole weeks and have enormous piles of luggage. And you think, what would they put in there? And they bring everything but the kitchen sink. And then we arrive on a rather complicated journey with just a little bit of stuff. And we take the tent and the sleeping bags, and but just minimal clothing. We just don't need a lot of stuff. And it's the camera gear that takes up most room.
So you actually fly into Tanzania.
Yeah, we fly from Seattle to Amsterdam, make a connection with KLM there, and then we go on down to Kilimanjaro Airport in Tanzania. Then we're met by our African representative, who is a board member of Adventure Classroom.
Someone you know well.
Oh, yes, extremely.
We talked about him last time, I think.
He's an extraordinary individual, extraordinary. And he's also a safari guide. He's been doing this for 16 years, and he is an amazing, amazing individual. In fact, we have steered several people to him who want to go on a tourist-type journey on safari, see the wildlife. They might be birders. They might be photographers. And we've steered these people to him, and they've all had an amazing experience. He's a naturalist, and he really... He really knows the birds, the animals, and he can pick up a bird. He can see a bird long before we can. He has the animals. He has the eyes of a cat, and he knows the name instantly. Its history, its weight, lives.
How old a guy is this?
Just 38 years old.
Oh, 30. Okay, and youngster.
Yes, extraordinarily intelligent man. A very energetic. And very, very, he has a passionate interest in the wildlife and the environment. And
how did you find him?
A friend of ours had been on safari in Africa and told us about this absolutely marvelous person. And so we contacted him and said, well, you know, we're not tourists. We're there for education. This is why we're there. And so we went and met him, and my goodness, totally beyond the highest expectations. And so he's a very valued member of Adventure Classroom. And so we continue to steer people to him if you want to go on safari and really learn.
Well, now, so he met you at the airport. He picks you up. Now, does he go with you on these tracks to live with the natives? And does he stay with you?
Yes, he does. He stays all the time with us. He has very close connections with various tribes. And he develops relationships with the tribes, and he's actually the son of an Italian physician, and so he's half Chaga and half Italian, and so he goes and he has these connections with these tribes, and he goes ahead.
And
of
now he's obviously must speak English.
Yeah, he speaks perfect English.
Okay, but then does he also speak the tribal languages?
He speaks Swahili, and there's always somebody within these tribes who can speak Swahili.
Ah, okay.
And so he develops a relationship, and paves the way for us, and then of course the emphasis on our age, because of our age, we're treated as respected elders in these tribes.
Now, that hasn't just been in Africa. That's been in other places you've gone.
All through Asia. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like we sort of missed the message here in this country, didn't we, about respecting elders? And because you really are, and that saved your life.
Yes, it has.
A few times, because you were able to pull the elder card.
Yes.
And they, can't kill you.
Yes, exactly.
We have to respect you.
The elder card is very important overseas, and it gets us into places, it gets us into tribes where, like, tribes in the very remote areas that just simply do not want tourists anywhere near them. But our contact, his name is John, he gets us into these places, and so we're able to go live with the tribes and learn and ask questions. They give us permission to take all the photography we want, and we're able to do things that normally would not be possible if we just turned up. We just couldn't do it.
Right. Okay. So now, John's picked you up. You're in Tanzania.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like February.
Yes.
So what's the climate like in the area that you were in?
Well, what we did this time, we went to the southern Serengeti. In November, we were more in the north and the central Serengeti, so that we would be there. There are tribes that we were able to live with the Maasai at that time, not in the Serengeti, but outside. And then we traveled back into Serengeti to be part of the migration of the wildebeest. 2 million animals travel from the north to the south. And so we're able to observe
the
environment and the animal migration and the predators, the way they move with them. We're able to see how that worked.
Trip you actually saw?
And then
all that?
Now in February, of course, by February.
Oh, okay. So that was back in November saw that.
The entire migration now has moved right down to the south, the southern Serengeti, to where the grass is growing now in the wetter season, and this is where they have their calves. 2 million animals are down, of wildebeest are there, along with the zebra and all of the predators. They all travel with them. So now this time we were able to see how the wildlife and during this calving and foaling period goes. acts and how the environment fits in with that, the weather system and everything.
You know, it's sounding very familiar to me, but in a different part of the world. It sounds very much like what you've explained to us and we've talked about in terms of what you've experienced up in like Alaska and the wilderness and refuge up there and the caribou migration because they
do the same thing.
They trek to the coast to have their baby, and you've done the trek with the caribou.
Yes, we walked with the caribou. We walked about 600 miles with the Western Arctic caribou herd. About 500,000 animals, and then we walked with the porcupine caribou herd about 400 miles as they went north to their calving grounds.
So is this a similar experience, except instead of being in Alaska, you're in Africa?
It's a very similar experience, except that in Africa it's even more profound. It's huge, because here there are 2 million wildebeest, and there's about 500,000 or so zebra travel with them. But then all of the cats, the cheetahs, and the leopards, and the lions, and
they're kind of like following.
Yeah, the predators follow, and then because they know those calves are going to be born down there, and then of course there are the various other animals that travel with them also. But the hyenas, for instance, there's a lot of hyenas with them, and so now in February we're down there in the calving area in the southern Serengeti. And the calves are all born within, say, 2 to 3 weeks.
Wow.
They're just
massive birthing.
Yeah, just like the birthing of the caribou herds. They're born just about all at once so that the predators, they can't get everything.
They can't eat everybody.
So that ensures the survival. And the wildebeest are runners. They run everywhere. They run for no apparent reason. They run over here, then they run right back, then they run back again. And so those calves, when they hit the ground, when they're born and hit the ground, they have to start running.
Well, so, and a wildebeest to me, when I think of one, I think of kind of a bigger body and head, but real thin legs.
Thin legs, very long face,
a
long black mane.
Yeah.
These are the white-bearded wildebeest as a species. And many people say, well, they're not very pretty, but we think all animal, even... We met someone last night who said he just hates hyenas. He just can't stand to even look at them. But they have their own beauty to them. I have a photo of a hyena with his mouth wide open looking straight at the camera. And you can see all of his teeth. It's an amazing sight. And you think, well, no wonder they're carnivores. Because they're the carnivores that come in last and chew the bones. So they have these massive jaws that can...
Wow.
But it was really interesting to see all of these animals interacting with this huge, it's the greatest and biggest migration in the world. And this area, if you can picture standing in the midst of a place and you can't see, you look to the horizon in all directions and it's sort of flattish.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also see wildebeest in all directions. You can be looking 60, 70 miles out and it's a wildebeest on the horizon. Just a carpet
because of this
them.
2 million, they all go together.
Yep, and then you might
that's
go.
Just a, that seems like a mind-boggling amount.
You might go to a certain area, and there's none there. They're not there. But you go back the next day, and they ran back because they're running all the time. They travel very fast.
So, because you said that wildebeests are running, and they go one way and then the other way. So they don't necessarily do a straight trek all the way to when they get one, and then they run around.
Just running. They kick their heels up. They look really happy out there in the wild. But then, of course, we saw many things within the herd. They're not the greatest mothers in the world. The lions will come, of course, and then hunting, and then so the wildebeest will panic and run. Well, sometimes young calves are left behind, and so they're automatically on the menu. And we did come into, and being farmers, it was sad because we actually encountered a couple of calves at different times where they had been left, and they're just standing there.
Oh, God, that had to be heartbreaking.
They can't find mother. Mother's never.
And you probably wanted to scoop them up and bring them home.
Yeah, bring them home, put them in the barn, and raise them just like we would a calf or something here.
Yeah,
but you can't, and it's so hard just to walk away from that. It's just tough. But that's, you know, it's nature. It's the balance of nature.
Oh, and I'm just remembering. I have a question for you from my cat run guy. Sam, this is for you. Any meerkats wherever you were?
No, we didn't see any meerkats, no.
So you weren't in the part of Africa where the meerkats are?
No, we didn't see meerkats. We saw the cats were lions. Oh, goodness gracious, we've seen more lions. And then there's the cheetahs and the leopards. We saw a serval cat.
Serval?
Which is very rare. They're very secretive, very shy animals. Very rare to see them. In fact, John, who is a naturalist and he's been out there among these animals for 16 years, he had only seen one once before. They're very
wow.
rare.
Wow.
And we saw many other
animals.
Well,
you seem to be blessed in that regard.
Yeah,
I think because you walk a very high path because you are one of the only humans on the planet that have seen a Gobi bear.
Yeah, very few people. Westerners, almost no Westerners.
Because what, there's like 35 left on the entire planet? And you guys saw one in the Gobi Desert.
Last time we were in Tanzania, we actually saw an albino baboon.
Albino baboon.
Which we have not found anybody who's seen one of those. And so.
Wow.
We've seen some really rare, and we actually found the, before we went in to live with the tribes and into the, with the migration of the wildebeest, we actually searched for and found the colobus monkey, and we found three families of them.
Now describe a colobus monkey.
A colobus monkey. There's several species of the colobus. This one is black and white, a gorgeous creature.
About what size?
Probably stands about 2.5 feet high, and they have an enormously long, beautiful white, bushy tail, and they have a white mane that comes that flows across their back, across this black body, and they have a face that has this white mask around it. They're just a beautiful animal, and it's, you know, if you see one or two, you might be lucky, but we actually saw three families.
Wow!
And on the last one. Here is this one male just walked out onto a bare branch, perfect for photography, up close.
So he
and
posed
personal.
For the camera.
Yeah, it was as though he was saying, hi.
Put me in the classroom.
Yeah, exactly.
Here I am.
And so we were able to get the most amazing photos of this fellow. We couldn't believe it. So we keep running across these incredibly fortunate events that just crop up in our path. So,
well, we're going to have to figure out once you get the digital work done for the African tour. We're going to because we've been toying with the idea of because we've done slideshows on the radio before and we've just done the slideshows on the wall here and described them to you. But we want to come up with a digital version that we can so we can have the slides here in the studio and talk them, but that you'll be able to like go to Helen's website and watch the same slide presentation. That'll be really cool. So maybe. Yeah. We can figure that out.
Because we have so many. In fact, last night, a man who works with our a web designer and so forth, he who works with an Adventure Classroom with us, and he's also a birder, and he was going through some of our bird images, and he couldn't believe the birds. It's just amazing. And so he even recommended that I should do a bird program for the Audubon Society.
Oh,
because
we
have so many birds, so many unusual birds, and up close and just it worked out very well. So, but we have a huge backlog now of various animals. I think we have photos of lions in all situations. Even lions are totally passed out. They're just so full of food. And then they sleep because they're at the top of the food chain. They don't have to worry about
predators.
The hyena and these animals are not going to hunt them.
Yeah.
Whereas you see the cheetahs now, you're among the cheetahs. They don't really lay down and pass out. They dare not because a hyena can come up and bother them or something like this, or a lion could get them. So the fellow,
a lot of
the
smaller big cats, don't they usually, like, once they have prey, they haul them up into a tree
a
to eat
does.
Them and stuff?
A leopard does. A cheetah eats on the ground.
Eats on the ground? Okay.
We found one lioness up in a tree, a beautiful acacia tree. And here she's reclining on this big branch just in full view, and she was up there to get out of the flies, away from the flies, because flies are a lot of flies.
Now, did you ever feel threatened by any of the wildlife?
No. If they've eaten and they have that, well, you can sense it, and John is extraordinary at this. He can sense if an elephant or any animal might be aggressive. Might not want us around, and he.
Well, because I've reported on there was a story recently, I think, about somebody maybe the last time you were on, that people in Africa, you know, doing the regular tourist thing, and she was trampled by an elephant.
Yeah, but that should never have happened because if you're with a person, for instance, we're with John, and he is so in tune with these animals. He knows how we've been within touching distance of an elephant.
Well, that's what you were saying, these wild elephants.
Yes, and just within a few feet of a lion. But he knows.
Oh, really? Lions, too?
He knows if that animal is dangerous or cares about us. Because it can...
Well, it's true. You know, if you've got your heart open and you're at all sensitive and we're talking, you should be able to feel that.
And then by now, we can see that in them ourselves. We can tell.
Yeah, you should
be lion able, yeah. A lion has the most expressive eyes of any animal we have ever met.
Really?
We have seen lions in the hunting mode where the eyes are just slits.
Yeah.
Then we've seen them, lazy and just passed out. And then we don't see their eyes at all. They're fast closed then. And then you see the lion who's just observant, or the lion who's looking into the distance, probably thinking about his financial portfolio or something. And then the lion with pure hatred. I will never forget that male lion. He uttered one enormous bellow, and there's a look of hate in his eyes.
At you?
Yes, at us. It was amazing.
Wow.
Of course, you could imagine we hit the reverse gear, and we were out of there fast. But
because you could tell he was not a happy camper
and
with your
the
presence.
Eyes, the lion's eyes are the most expressive of any animal eyes we have ever. And I've had that in photographs. It's amazing. You can just see from the passive looking in the distance, enjoying the sun, or defending the food, following his girlfriend, and that's quite a scene, and then into that hate. It's amazing. And so if you're in tune with the animals, and John is, that's why he does so well.
Then you can stay out
of
trouble, but it's up to you to pay attention. And
then, of course, when we're with the tribes, when we're with the tribal people, they know just...
they probably know this stuff inside out, upside down,
backwards. They know their animals. They live with the animals, so they know. And so we're always safe. But we don't... to start with, it's against the law to just go hiking across some national park. We have to have, and this is what John does for us, he gets special permission for us to go into places where people normally do not hike.
Well, that because that's similar to like when you were going to walk across the Gobi.
Yeah.
You had to go over there and you had to convince, didn't you, the official whoevers?
Yes.
And they didn't want to let you do that because they thought you were nuts.
Well, nobody had made this long 1,600-mile journey before, and they couldn't see how we could be successful. And then, of course, in Africa, in Eastern Africa with the animals, if you were to put your tent up in the middle of the Serengeti, you'd be surrounded by lions, and then right behind them would be some cheetahs, behind them would be the hyenas. So, there's a whole hierarchy out there.
You'd be on the menu, probably.
So you have to get special permission.
Okay.
And then you've got to...
And John is the one that makes those arrangements?
Yes. And then if we're not with the tribes, he's with us. So we're always with somebody under these circumstances who can help us be safe. Because we always say we don't, if we don't make it back alive, we don't make a very good educational program. There's not much to tell the kids if you get killed out there. So we have to be safe. And so in this way we can gather all the information. And then of course, when we're with the tribes, they are very, very protective of us.
Well, but first off, you did the migration thing.
Yes,
right?
In November.
So at that, when you're doing that migration, it was just like you and Bill and John.
Yes, in the migration, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you're carrying your tents and
we have our tent and sleeping bags, and minimal gear, absolutely minimal.
Because you said, well, if you just went out and camped in the middle of the desert, you'd have the lions and tigers and bears, oh my, and you'd be lunch.
You've got to know.
Well, so how do you? What do the three of you?
What we
somebody
do is
stay awake all the time and watch.
No, what we
do
is we put our camp up within the confines of one of the tribal villages or settlements. They will have, for instance, the Maasai. Last November we were put our camp up within the confines of a Maasai compound, and they have a big area. Perhaps it might be a quarter of an acre, a half acre. And this is where they bring their animals in around their mud huts at night for safety. Then they have a fence of thorn bushes, acacia thorn bushes, which nothing is going to walk through that. And
so
that
even
surrounds
the
whole
area.
This thorn fence will encircle the compound. And that's where we put the our tents and stuff up within that compound.
Okay, so even all along the migration route, there would be different tribal villages that you would be able to stay in. From, so you wouldn't spend a night, just the three of you out there by yourselves.
No, no, because you're pretty soon you're going to be dinner.
Because now, I mean, now I'm flashing back to your solo trek to the magnetic North Pole, and it was you were the problem there. Of course, would be polar bear, and at the last minute, you bought an Inuit dog, wolf dog,
Charlie,
to take with you, and thank goodness you did, or you probably wouldn't be here. The rest would be history, because you'd be in the drink or in a polar bear's stomach, and because he saved your life. But on that, you were able to sleep because he could alert you.
Yeah, exactly. I'd put my tent up out on the ice, but Charlie would. He was a polar bear dog, so he would sense the presence of any approaching polar bear.
And so he was so good; he would know if they were, if they were interested in eating you guys, or if they were otherwise engaged.
The polar bear might be of an aggressive nature. Then Charlie would warn. If they weren't, he just lay down and go to sleep. So I soon learned to take a cue from his actions. And it's the same in Africa when we're with the wild animals there.
It's the natives that know these things.
And also John.
And John.
They know.
You're picking it up too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have been out there so much now, spent so much time with these animals, just observing them in all phases of their life, and just being out there in the, you might say, the never-nevers, in this great, vast, open space, completely in tune with nature, because we have no television, no newspaper, no radio, there's no cell phone, there's nothing except us, the animals, and the environment. Then you very quickly, we find are in tune with what's going on around us.
I just can't imagine what an incredible... an incredible experience that has to be. Are you shushing him?
Yeah, he's making noise with the newspaper.
I doubt that anybody can hear that. Gary's shaking his head. They can't hear that.
Oh, okay.
But just so you all, now you'll know. See, that's why Bill did the same thing. He sits in the background and reads the paper. He's catching up on everything you missed.
Yes, exactly.
And speaking of that, you do go through a culture shock.
Oh, yeah. Coming back, never going. People say, ask us, well, what is it like going to these various cultures? Because when we live with the Bushmen this time, they're living the cave age style of 10,000 years ago. And people ask, well, what's the culture shock like? Well, it's not a problem going; it's coming home.
And you have no problem getting there and integrating.
No, we just fit in right away. When we get to SeaTac, and then we live out in the foothills of the Cascades, of course, so we have to drive past Seattle. And that's when we say, what are we doing to ourselves? And, what a mess this is. And you see people driving with one hand on the steering wheel, if you're lucky, and a cell phone in the ear, and this sort of thing. And you're just, where have we gone? And so we don't use the word civilization anymore, or primitive, or anything like that, because the tribes, the culture, the tribal people, they are not primitive, and they don't lack civilization. We sort of wonder a little bit about ourselves.
Well, yeah, it would seem that now, with all the experience that you've had, the places you've gone, that we may have misplaced that word civilized.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't apply. It doesn't apply to tribal people at all. They, for instance, going out with the Bushmen, it's absolutely amazing. They, when they're hungry, they go hunt. When they finish sleeping, they get up. When they're tired, they go to sleep. They have time to do nothing, and they hunt with a bow and arrow, the simplest of weapons, and it's extraordinary to just be with them. It's you have time to do nothing.
And did you encounter the same thing with very little physical possessions of any kind, mm-hmm, out in the middle of nowhere, and as you and I were discussing, with a bit of disdain, no Facebook and Twitter stuff.
No, nothing like that.
I mean, and you and I are just so in tune with this because we don't want to have anything to do with that kind of stuff.
No.
But they don't have anything. But did you encounter people very happy again?
They're very happy living their lifestyle. They are superb hunters. When they hunt, they're like cats. They're quiet. They float across the ground. And... And they can actually, we actually saw them with it, just the simplest of bows and arrows, just a giraffe tendon for the string and a wood.
A giraffe tendon?
Yeah, and the wooden bow, and then the wooden shaft for the arrow. And they buy, and these days, they've gone one step up. The Toga people, another tribe living, you know, over the mountains, so far, so to speak, they make arrows. They have blacksmiths, and they by hand they make these arrows.
What do they make the arrows out of?
They go find any scrap metal they can find. They melt it down in a little fire on the ground, and then they make these things, and they sell them to the bushmen for honey. The bushmen will bring honey out of the bush.
Oh, they trade honey for arrowheads.
Wow. And so here are these people, these bushmen, and we have actually seen them. There's a bird, they say, maybe a dove. We can hardly see it. It's so far away. And they fire the arrow and hit it in its neck, the place
Holy
where they
mackerel.
Aim. It's where they aim.
Wow.
And it's just, you mean, it's
That's
just
a
amazing.
Bow and arrow, and you can barely see the bird in the
and
distance.
It doesn't have, you know, it's not the compound bow and the one with the sights, all these modern bows, nothing. The simplest of bows that you could possibly imagine. Just
wow.
a string and a bowed piece of wood, that's all. And
wow.
it's just a straight shafted, and they straighten the arrows out with their teeth on the wood, and they just get a little branch and they straighten it out, and it's amazing what they do.
Okay, well, so let's back. So you've arrived in Tanzania, and John picks you up at the airport. Where do you go from there?
Well, this time we went right to the Arusha National Park because we wanted to find
Arusha National Park.
We went into the town of Arusha, and then out of, to get supplies, and then out of there into the Arusha National Park to find the colobus monkey.
Ah,
and so
okay.
we spent a day searching, and we were so fortunate we found these three families in one day. It was amazing, and they were on just the full display. It was just the photography we brought out from that. Then we headed off to the Maasai.
Now, and when you're heading off, now are you walking?
No,
are you driving?
Actually,
are you riding?
He actually has four-wheel drive vehicle.
Four-wheel drive, okay.
To get out far, far, far away in the back country where the tourists don't go, out to Maasai village where tourists, they don't experience
now, so
tourists.
How many miles out are we talking?
This is probably about 50 miles away.
50 miles
way,
out.
Way
okay.
deep off the tourist route. And so then we're with a Maasai family, and they took us in, and because that's where you can put your tent up and so forth and within their compound. And they
and like you described with the acacia,
yeah,
the thorn protection,
right.
and one family compound or
yes,
a
well,
village
a
compound?
Family. It's a family. There's a chief with 12 wives.
A chief with 12 wives. Hey, Gare.
And with, 30,
he doesn't have the energy for 12 wives right 30, now. He's 30, recovering from the flu.
30 something children, and
30 something children.
Yes. And it was very interesting, and because we lived with the Maasai in November, so we knew their lifestyle pretty much. And
what kind of you talked about pitching tents, but in a lot of the villages you've visited in other parts of the world, there's been some kind of yurt or
well, in the Gobi Desert, the people live in a ghere, which looks like a Russian yurt. Now, the Maasai live in mud huts.
Mud huts, okay.
Which are built by the women. The women haul the water.
Oh, I don't like the sound of that.
The women haul the water, bring the firewood.
All right, Scotty and Gary, Sam, don't listen to this part.
and they take care of, they raise the children, but they build the huts as well. The men, the only thing they do is tend the cattle.
Well, now, mud huts, so that do they put up some kind of frame?
Well, first of all, they take branches, and they put the ends into the ground, and they curve them over the top.
Oh, okay.
And then they take...
Branches from, obviously, some
acacia,
kind of tree. Acacia trees?
Then they take mud. Mud and cow dung and water. And then they mix that together, and that becomes the mud walls. Then they put plaster. They take the mud and the water, usually even cow urine, and the dung again, and make make a nice smooth plastering job inside and out. And the inside is dark. The Maasai don't have any light inside their huts.
Oh,
once they go inside their hut, it's in the dark, complete darkness. And they will have one room, perhaps for where wife number one might sleep, and then you know, another wife. Well, actually, no, in the Maasai, one wife, one hut. And then she'll have a place where the man, if when he visits her, he will have his place to sleep. And when the husband visits a wife, because each wife has her own mud hut.
Okay.
And so when he visits a wife, then he plants a spear.
I was going to say, I see him marking the the spear he puts.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like the necktie on the doorknob.
And that's the that's the signal that no visitors. Thank
no
you.
No visitors.
And so but then at the entrance, they don't have a direct door going in. It's a sort of a doorway on going in a little entrance going along the side of the hut for, say, about 6 or 7 feet, and there's a little room there. And this is for two reasons. Number one, if wild animals come, they're going to go through that door and go straight ahead about two steps over, they'll bump into a wall. Probably won't have the sense to go around into the inner area.
Okay.
Plus, if you visit...
So to keep the wild animals out,
if there's no spear planted in the ground, and you can visit... You can go through the first door and you wait in that place until you're invited to go inside.
Ah, okay.
And only the wife of the mud hut is allowed to just, and the kids are allowed to go straight in. Everybody else waits for a specific invitation to go inside.
So when you're waiting there, do you like knock or do you like
no? You just stand there.
You just stand there and wait for them to notice you.
Yeah, because they'll see you, and then you're asked inside.
Okay.
And then. The wife, she raised the children, but and then at about 10 years old, that she builds more huts for the girls and for the boys.
Oh.
And then the boys go away for circumcision any time between about, say, 7 and about, can be as much as 20 years old.
Wow.
They go in age groups, and they live in a cave with some elders who teach them things, and then they go through circumcision, and then they come back. Now they're warriors, and they carry a spear, and they're
that
to defend
them. That
must
be a painful experience.
And now they're defending. In the old days, they were considered to be extremely fierce warriors. In fact, the Maasai have never had any problems with the slave trade, because the slave traders wouldn't go near them because the Maasai would kill them. They've been free of that. And
now, how did they receive you?
Oh, well, they're fine. John goes ahead and he paves the way for us, and we're able to go in and just be sort of basically become part of the family while we're there.
All right. Well, we are going to take a break from Africa for the moment. We're going to take care of our advertisers and sponsors. Then we've got to come back and do current events. We do have some new items on current events. That will probably take us through the rest of this hour, but we've got one full hour to go. And so I hope you'll stay with us so we can find out more about the tribes and Helen and Bill's experience in Africa. I'm excited, so stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Hey, since 1978, Puget Sound area animal owners have been able to depend on Jones & Company Pets for all of their animal care needs. At Jones & Company, their spacious store allows room for everything you need for your animal companions. You can find foods, accessories, fish supplies, supplements, cleaning products, and a whole lot more. The store within a store concept makes it easy to find the right products for your dog, cat, fish, bird, or exotic animal friend, and Jones & Company rigorously trains their staff so they can easily answer all of your questions. Now, if you go to the Animal World website, www.marthanorwalk.com. On the home page, you'll see a link to the Jones and Company Pets website. Go there and you can see all of the items that are currently on sale, which is usually everything but the kitchen sink. You'll find out right away that it's worth a trip to Jones and Company. You'll find them on State Street in Marysville. You can give them a call at 360-658-7817. That's 360-658-7817 at Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy and healthy pets.
This new year, give your dog, cat, or ferret the gift of great health naturally. Make NuPro all-natural supplements an essential part of your pet's diet. NuPro makes an awesome gravy sure to please. This gravy provides fresh nutrients for a beautiful, silky skin and coat, a strong immune system, and a healthy digestion, among other wonderful benefits. NuPro's joint support formula is perfect for working dogs, large breeds, and especially seniors. So go with NuPro, your pet's best friend for over 20 years. Go to NuProSupplements.com for more information. That's NuProSupplements.com.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs and prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
For over a decade, In Clover has made quality natural supplements so that age 10 may become the new 6 for your dog or cat, living a vibrant, active, healthy life. In Clover uses the best of science to design supplements for wellness that work and work fast. Dogs showed significant improvement within 15 days of starting Connectin. In Clover's fast, all-in-one joint supplement. Connectin's 9 natural herbs work synergistically to further support joint health. In Clover's products are made in the USA with only the finest ingredients. Go to InClover.com to find a retailer near you.
Urine contamination is a common and stubborn problem. Conventional cleaning methods are not the answer. Anti-Icky Poo works quickly and naturally, and it's my all-time absolute favorite odor neutralizer. This unique bacteria enzyme solution converts the waste directly into carbon dioxide, a safe and odorless gas found in everyday clean air. Ask your vet for Anti-Icky Poo or call 1-800-745-1677. Anti-Icky Poo, it's a serious product with a funny name that really works, especially on cat urine. 1-800-745-1671.
Get your smile on with Alternative Talk 1150.
Hey y'all, Martha Norwalk, and boy, we're winding down the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World. Make sure you sprung forward last night and... that your clock's in time, not like on time, not like my clock that I'm looking at. And we are here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And we're taking a break from Helen and Bill Thayer and Africa at the moment. But and I just want to remind you, if you heard the In Clover commercial, if you're not aware of the Connectin herbal arthritic supplement, I've just got to remind you that it is miracle work. My golden retriever, Annie Golden, would absolutely not be alive if it were not for Connectin. And I have to tell you, I was thinking about it yesterday, as a matter of fact, why is Annie Golden still in her body? And I'm saying, well, number one is because of me. Because I'm the one that rescued her and kept her alive all these years with the behavior therapy. Number two, because of Dr. Al Pluckner, because without his understanding of the endocrine immune imbalance and being able to stabilize that is what understanding and stabilizing that imbalance is what eliminated the flash aggression, so it allowed me to keep her with my other animals. And then number three is Connectin. Because without the Connectin, I found out this fall when I took her off it briefly that without it, she literally could not move. She couldn't get off the floor. She was in excruciating pain. And every day is a miracle that she's here. And it is glucosamine and chondroitin and then 9 herbs at therapeutic levels. And it is absolutely miraculous. If you or anyone you know has a dog or cat suffering from arthritic pain, you gotta try Connectin because it works miracles. So there you go. I just wanted to remind you of that. All right. That being done, it is time for current events.
Yeah.
Stephanie Mudbaker. I'll go home. Carrie's looking like, should I just play this music for like ever? Because guess what? Helen is saying, connecting, where do I get it? And I was saying, Sam's Dogs and Cats in Monroe has it. All the Mudbake Granary stores have it. Most pet stores do. Their website is inclover.com. Because, Helen, you've learned a lot on this show. I mean, you kept Charlie going for years, your wolf dog, because Missing Link, and then acupuncture and chiropractic with Dr. Panzer. And
yes, he lived, it's a 100-pound dog, lived to be 23 years old.
Amazing.
And we figure that acupuncture alone gave him probably another 6 years.
Yeah. Well, what have you, this connectin is, like Annie, at this point, I haven't even started acupuncture with her because the connectin keeps her going.
Really?
And yeah, and her joint, she looks like a human with severe rheumatoid arthritis. You know, her joints are swollen and deformed and her feet go.
How do you spell connectin?
Just like a C-O-N-N-E-C-T-I-O-N.
Okay.
Connectin. Connectin comes in a chewable tablet and a powdered form. I use the powder. I just put it in her dinner. But it absolutely is miraculous. All right. So on the current events list. All right. We got more pit bulls here. The Great Pit Fix for April 2010. Kitsap Humane Society is providing free spay and neuter services for pit bulls. You can call them at 360-692-6977 or go to www.kitsap-humane.org. Hands to Paws, a small animal massage, will be hosting a free dog massage and consultation event at Pet Elements. That's in West Seattle, 6701 California Avenue Southwest in Seattle. That'll be on Sunday, March 28th from 10 a.m. to noon. There'll be a raffle for some great stuff, and all donations will be going to benefit Missing Pet Partnership. And if you want to call about the Hands to Paws free massage consultation, the number is 206-932-0457. Don't worry if you're not getting all the details. Go to the Animal World website, MarthaNorwalk.com, and click on current events, and you'll get all of these and a whole lot more. Oh, this is kind of interesting. Rhonda, my webmaster, came up with this one. Tacoma Art Museum has a new exhibit called The Secret Language of Animals, which sounds marvelous, and it'll be going on through June 27th. They're also having a digital animal art contest that you can enter until April 16th. You know, winner gets like free pass to the Tacoma Art Museum and stuff. So, you know, check it out. You can submit digital images through Flickr or email to contest@tacomaartmuseum.org. Seattle Canine Club annual auction to benefit Seattle Animal Shelters Help the Animals Fund and Pet Population Control Fund is Thursday, March 25th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the atrium of the Seattle Design Center. You can check www.seattleanimalshelter.org for more information about that. And then I've told you Zoodoo and Bedspread, it will be soon available. They don't have enough to go around, so you enter a lotto-type drawing. You send postcards to the zoo by March 20th. And then if you are lucky enough to have your postcard drawn, you get some Zoodoo or Bedspread. And let's see. I think that covers most of the current stuff, other than to say Seattle Kennel Club Dog Show is still going on today. Time to get down there to check out the dogs, if you like. And then next week, we will be addressing elephants, and more elephants, and particularly the three elephants at Woodland Park Zoo, Bamboo, Chai, and Watoto. We will have local animal rights experts in the studio with us, and then national experts with us throughout the show. We'll be talking to Mel Richardson, a veterinarian who is the former zoo veterinarian here at Woodland Park. We've got a gal from In Defense of Animals who's an expert about elephants in zoos around the country. And then we will be talking to the founder and director of the Tennessee Elephant Sanctuary, And they, of course, have offered to pay all the expenses to move our elephants to the sanctuary in Tennessee. And we now believe 100%, I believe with every cell of my being, it is the right thing to do for our elephants. So we're going to do what we can to help that happen. And so I hope you will join us, because that's a major, major discussion next week. Won't necessarily be pleasant, but it is important. And then week after next on Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and Anything That Helps Our Animal Friends Sunday, Rob and Alexis will join us live in the last half hour of the show. And Sandy and Robin and I will chat with the higher realms of spirit and the animals and directly the elephants from Woodland Park Zoo. And we will get their perspective on all of this. So I hope you will be here for that. All right, that's going to wrap up. Believe it already, the second hour is history. Gary's saying, thank goodness. We need to get this boy home to bed. He just looks pooped. Anyway, we've got another full hour to go. And yes, if you're, what do you mean, only 1 hour left? Well, we sprung